When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Jaggi Shivdasani, and you're listening to Sorry Partner.
Hello, and welcome to Sorry Partner, a podcast about bridge and all things interesting to bridge players, brought to you by bridge partners and friends, Catherine Harris and Jocelyn Starts. On today's program, we talk with Indian champion Jaggi Shivdasani about lunch breaks and ferry schedules and learning to appreciate your partner. Plus, he shares his top tip for developing players. But first, let's kibitz. Hi, partner.
Hi, partner. How are you, Catherine?
Jocelyn, I'm really well. How are you?
I'm doing well. And I had a really lovely time the other day at a house bridge party.
Oh.
You know how, you know, we're always griping about this or that, but it really can be so wonderful to be in a social gathering with your bridge buddies. And it really brought home to me that it is a wonderful community of people that I otherwise never would have met. And I am very grateful. But what was really funny was a friend of mine who was there asked me, so what does Kvel even mean? And she was thinking about our Club Kvel feature. Somebody piped in, oh, it's like to complain.
Oh, gosh.
I said, no, that's kvetch. Kvel is more about like expressing pride in your club. So here's an example of a kvetch for anybody who is still mystified. I'm going to kvetch about something that happens when we're playing online, and you pre-alert our system, you know, one line about 2/1, upside down, blah, blah, blah. It annoys me to no end when opponents just write CC is posted in the chat. It's supposed to be posted. So that goes without saying. And you know, it would be nice if you reciprocated and gave us a little bit of the, 30,000 foot view of your system. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
But CC is posted. I'm kvetching about that one, Catherine.
I'm with you there, Jocelyn. It drives me nuts when people do that. Also, I just feel when I'm playing online, I don't want to have to be ferreting around in people's convention cards if it's something that they could very easily pre-alert, as you say, or alert in a timely fashion when they're making the bids.
Agreed. And yeah, definitely when they make an artificial bid, if it's not clearly an artificial bid to us, they need to alert it right when they make the bid, not later. Anywho, we could probably go on all day with the kvetching.
Except that now it's time for Club Kvel.
Club in the Spotlight.
Hi, Jocelyn and Catherine. My name is Anna Kelmer. I am calling you to brag about my club, Te Aroa. Te Aroa is based in the North Island of New Zealand. Te Aroa, the town, is a small country town of about 4,000 people. And the name actually literally translates from Māori to love, the love. We've recently celebrated our 70th anniversary. Sadly, the club nearly closed 10 years ago. There was only 8 paying members, and they played 2 tables once a fortnight. Since then, though, we've had a real resurgence. We brought the club up to about 70 members, which includes most of my family, my 2 brothers, my sister-in-law, my niece, my nephew, my daughter, my mum, my stepdad. We all play at Te Aroa now. I think we lay claim to being the fastest growing club in New Zealand, which is great. We play twice a week. Our Tuesday sessions are our most popular. Most of our club members are pretty young and work and farm. So we get about 11 or 12 tables on a Tuesday night. Very, very social. We have a group of 10, 15, 20 people that meet for drinks and dinner at the pub prior to bridge. We play bridge, and then there's a strong group of people that will stay after bridge and have a few ports, discuss hands, discuss what's happening in the community. So that's a really important part of our club. So yeah, very, very social. We recently went to the Gold Coast Congress and had 10 of our members travel. So again, that's really important. We love to travel as a group, play bridge and enjoy the game and the social connections we make. Anyway, thanks so much for the opportunity to talk about our club. We think it's great. Thanks very much. Bye.
So come on down. Email us if you'd like to kvell about your club. Club in the spotlight. I'm kvelling.
2 letters today, Jocelyn. Our first letter is from Denise in Quebec, who we've met.
Oh, hi. Yes, we've played with.
Yeah, hi, Denise.
Salut, Denise.
Denise writes, my husband and I live in Quebec and we love to travel. We have gone to many European countries and have played bridge in many of them. It's very interesting to experience other cultures this way. Some of our fondest bridge memories relate to our trips. One time in Italy, we turned up to a club to be told that we weren't dressed appropriately. No jeans, no t-shirts, nothing too revealing. Luckily, we were kind of living in our car, so we went back to the parking lot and changed. We finally passed the door inspection and found ourselves in a very chic bridge room with waiters wearing suits and gloves, serving players drinks at the table.
Wow.
Another time in France, we got talking to an opponent who just loves Quebec's history. He couldn't get enough of us, so he invited us and about 10 other bridge players to have dinner at his house after the game. He called a caterer and told us to follow him in our car. It turns out his house was a 1,000-year-old castle. It was like a museum, with Louis XIV furniture, many paintings, a huge fireplace in the kitchen. My gosh, I'm never going to forget that day.
No.
And so many other great stories and people. Many times we were invited to play for free or we were offered drinks after the games. Always people welcomed us with great joy and were very happy to have us as guests at their club. So yes, bridge is a great way to meet all kinds of interesting people. Next time you're in a foreign country, try a bridge game. Who knows? Something special might happen to you.
That is wonderful. Thank you, Denise. And I agree. It is so much fun.
Absolutely. And it goes to your point, Jocelyn, that it's a ready-made bridge community and people are very often very welcoming no matter where you are. So thank you, Denise. Our next letter today is from Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
At one of my clubs in Malvern, which is in Worcestershire in England, we play in the evening and don't have an interval. The preference is for an earlier finish. About half the field goes to the pub and half get off home early. The problem, not a big problem, I will concede, is about which pub we go to, with people living on either side of the town and also further away. Last week, we considered that the winning pair should decide which pub we go to, and we were quite pleased with this. But on reflection, maybe we could do better. Maybe the losers should choose the pub and the winners should buy the drinks. The only downside we could see was that the winners might not be so keen to actually attend the pub. It's fair to say that the pub is where more learning is done than at the bridge table. And then Steve has sent us a postscript with more information about the two pubs in question. They are the Swan and the Morgan. I almost never go to the Morgan, but it's an interesting place and well worth a visit. Malvern is perhaps best known in English bridge circles for the Malvern Congress, which is a tournament, as we all know now. Potentially a misnomer, as the Congress now takes place in Worcester. It's always been a county congress and not too sure about the history of that. And he says, so much is going on in Worcestershire Bridge. Maybe I could have my own slot on the show.
That's funny. Worcestershire reminds me of that lovely, yummy sauce.
Yes, absolutely delicious. Well, actually, yes. Steve also sent us some pronunciation guidance and referred to the source in case we needed an external reference. Thank you for that also, Steve.
So if you have any fun stories about playing bridge abroad or about heading to the pub after the game, or if you have something you'd like to kvetch about, please send it to us at sorrypartnerpodcast@gmail.com. You can find all of our contact details on our website at sorrypartner.com, along with some other good stuff.
Coming up next, our interview with Jaggi Shiv Dasani.
Indian champion Jaggi Shiv Dasani burst onto the bridge scene in 1976, winning India's Holkar Trophy at just 18 years of age. He has since won more than 50 Indian national events, 3 U.S. nationals, and a gold medal from the 2018 Commonwealth Games. He took bronze at the 1988 World Bridge Olympiad, bronze at the 2018 Asian Games, silver at the 2023 Asian Games, and came second at the most recent WBT event in Iceland. We began by asking if he'd had any interesting hands lately.
Oh, yes. I had a very interesting hand lately. My hand was King 4th, stiff, King Queen 10, and Ace King 10-9 5th. At first, it looked like a normal 16.4135 hand, a pretty good 16 with control cards. And I opened a club and we were non-well against well. And it goes one heart overcore on my left. I certainly expected someone to bid hearts, either someone on my left or my partner or someone on my right. And it goes a heart and my partner says double. And we're playing the Italian system, which shows precisely four or five spades. Not three, not two, not one, not six, not seven, not more. Exactly four or five spades. And I'm aware that these responses can be slightly light. And the next bid I hear, which is something I never expected to hear in my whole life, is my right-hand opponent, who's a pretty solid player, bids six hearts. And for after many, many years of bridge, I scratched my head a bit. And I tried to visualize what is my right-hand opponent's hand. The two things I concluded were that he had many hearts and he had a void in clubs. Okay. And now what else did he have? His secondary suit had to be diamonds and he had to have a control card in spades. So his hand was five or six or seven hearts. He had some spade and probably length, diamonds and length, and a void in clubs. Now, it appears that I might have some defense, but it depends on two things. One is that my left-hand opponent having more than two diamonds, and it depended on my partner finding the spade lead and my left-hand opponent having two spades. So I said, we're white, they're red. I'm going to do something which probably no one is going to do in the entire field. I sacrifice six spades. And it turned out to be a miraculous decision because six spade double went for three down 500 and they were called for six hearts. And if you compared my score against all other tables, and this was not match points, this was a quarterfinal stage of a knockout match in a national event, and the Indian standards have become pretty good these days. There was nobody else in the entire field. Everybody was either doubling four heart, five heart, or six heart. and 1660 was converted into minus 500. Happy to say that we went on to win the event. But this was the end.
That is fascinating.
And that is going to help me answer maybe a question that you ask in the future.
Which question would that be?
What do you love most about bridge?
Okay, well, what do you love most about bridge?
And this hand helps me answer that. Every time you play, something new comes up. I've played bridge for 50 years. I've competed and I won my first national championship 48 years ago. And while there may be some commonalities and themes, there will always be something to learn and always be something to think about, no matter how experienced you are. So that's what I love most about bridge.
Something that struck me as you were describing your thought process as far as what to do when your right-hand opponent bids six hearts. First of all, you had a pretty good idea what was in your partner's hand. Then you started thinking about what
my right-hand opponent have.
What your right-hand opponent must have for that bid. And then you started thinking about the things that you would need in terms of the secondary suits, the side suits, that they would not be short so that you could at least get your tricks there.
Right.
And just thinking about it, do you do that as a matter of course for every hand, or do you save that kind of analysis for the harder hands?
Well, that's, I think, the hallmark of a good bridge player, and it helps in opening leads. Because when you visualize what the dummy is going to look like, and you basically make an assessment of are you trying to lead passive or aggressive, depending on the bidding, and visualizing the dummy and visualizing the declarer's hand, based on the information that they are exchanging. Remember, when they are exchanging information, it comes with a risk. They are also exposing something to you. So you have to be able to interpret that. So I make it a routine of trying to see, some themes are common. And there's some leads which you don't even have to think about. God gave you king, queen, jack, ten of a suit. 99% of the time you're going to leave it. But God doesn't always give you that. So you have to visualize. And that's why the best bridge players in the world, more often than not, find better leads than the other players. And there's a logic and a reason behind that. Because they visualize. And yes, to answer your question, I do try to visualize. Sometimes it's virtually automatic. But you try to do that to help you solve the problem or the puzzle on every hand.
Was that something that you have always been able to do, or were you aware of training yourself to do it?
Well, bridge, I think, comes from, or ability in bridge comes from a couple of things. One is something which is God-given. Secondly, it is the ability to concentrate and concentrate over long periods of time, learn what you've learned, and take good advice and always keep your mind open. I mean, that's true about life too. If you stop having an open mind, it's better that you stop living. So, well, I'm 66 years old and I still have an open mind. And I think that's a big positive.
But going back to when you were learning to play bridge, was this something that you were doing then? Or did you become mindful of being aware of and practicing that ability to visualize the hand?
See, the first thing in life, I started when I was very young and I got into it by chance. My father was a national bridge champion, but he had retired from playing competitive bridge by the time I started. I started playing with some cousins and then I realized I had ability and I started reading. The learning came from Terence Reese's books, Hugh Kelsey's books, and then I read a lot. And that's the way I think that a person who wants to get better, it has to read a lot. In terms of books which are readable and fantastic to just read are of all of Zia's books. They're all fantastic. And I still read. But my greatest influence were the books that I read 50 years ago. And those were Terence Reese and Hugh Kelsey.
And it was through this reading that you really put your game together.
I'd say there are two ways, and I followed them both. One, to read. And there were three, actually. Second, to play as much as possible. And thirdly, and the most importantly, was to watch really good players and try to understand what they do and why. And if they are open enough to receive your question, ask them why if you didn't understand. Because that's how it made you a better player. And being inquisitive, being young, I did a lot of that. And that's what helped me improve my game. And I still do. I mean, for example, about when I used to play regularly in America, Zia, Norberto Bocchi and me used to go a couple of days earlier to a Nationals and play golf. We're all golfers. And on the golf course, I would pick their brains, especially the Italian, Bocchi, about their Italian systems, which had revolutionized bidding. And they had done so very well. Like this concept of when you open a minor, an opponent's overcalled a heart, and they double four, showing four or five spades, was something that was unheard of. It was in the old days, you bid a spade with five, you doubled with four, and with three you said, God help me, what should I do? You know, but the reality was, so you're open to learning. I discussed it with him, and he didn't look at me as a threat. So he explained what the logic and what the system was, and I immediately imbibed it in my methods. So you always, you learn from people who know more. Even now, there are relay systems and there are improvements happening all the time.
And you're very happy if someone comes up and asks you a question?
Right. Or comes to play golf with you before the Nationals and peppers you with questions.
I'm happy. One of the things that I've learned, that I've learned so much in life, I'm very happy. I'm very open to imparting knowledge, which I think I can contribute. I am not trying to keep it secretive. Or I said, okay, it's not only about methods. You have to have judgment. You have to have flair. You know, there's so many things in bridge. Intuition, partnership, rapport, you know.
You were talking about visualizing and how important that is. When you visualize what's in the unseen hands, what does it look like to you? Like, what are you actually seeing when you're visualizing?
You know, if you are talented, sometimes you just get a flash of the hand in your mind. Even without the steps and process and logic, the hand just, you know, when you're playing a hand especially, sometimes you just know literally how every card is lying. Not every necessarily every spot card, but the distribution and the relevant high cards. And obviously a lot of that is by deductive process, taking positive inferences and negative inferences. Not only what an opponent did, but also what an opponent did not do. These are very important things. You know, your above average bridge player can take a very good inference from what an opponent does. But the better and the best bridge players also take an inference from what the opponent did not do.
So does it look like a hand diagram in your mind? Or does it look more abstract than that? Is it a shape? Or is it the actual pattern?
No, it's the actual everything. It's the actual hand, the high cards, the distribution, and then visualizing how the play should go based on the information you've assessed, based on the information you have, and sometimes you've got to amend your plans midstream as the information changes.
Do you feel like that has ever been a challenge for you to have to revise your assumption?
It's always a challenge, and you always have to be focused and keep thinking and rethinking in case something happens. And of course, you have to cater about various possibilities. We know about bad breaks and how we can, there are some simple safety plays that people learn, but it's much, much, much more than that. You know, so, and there was a hand where we played in the national final where the guy who was sitting in my seat is supposed to be one of the best dummy players in India. Some say even he's the best. I mean, he's 49, 50 years old. I'm much older than him. And it's the same man, the same contract of four hearts. And I made it and he did not. Because I did something which was what seemed to be the logical play and it worked out to be right. He made something which was an illogical play and it didn't work out right. Now, we know the cards can be very unfriendly. You know, when you make the logical play, it can go against you. And sometimes you make the illogical play, it works for you. That's bridge. Those are the imponderables. And that's one another reason why you keep coming back. But if you play consistently over a period of time with the right flair, the right technique, you will succeed more often than others. And that hand actually won us the event.
Do you know why he must have had a reason for making that illogical play?
Well, I don't think he thought about the hand completely, which I did. And he was obviously hurting because they lost the match. by 10 and a half IMPs in this hand was worth 12. So he wasn't exactly coming out and asking me or telling me why he thought the way he did. But his teammates did come up to me and ask me, why did you do what you did? So I explained to them, this is what the logic of the hand explained to me, and I did it this way. So they said, well played, sir. You played better than our guy.
And now for a short break. And remember, if you don't like the ads, you can sign up for ad-free episodes on our website.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And we're back.
Thinking about one of your regular partners, what might they say is an area that is perhaps not your strongest?
You know, when I was much younger, I don't think I ever said sorry, partner. I think I ever complimented my partner. I was a very bad partner. I was a very good player, but one of the worst partners. I was. And I realized that this is not going to help. And I have to really work on that. And I have worked on that. And now I do not ever say anything to partner during the game. After the match is over, I might say, partner, on this hand, did you think you might have thought of things differently? Perhaps this inference or that inference might have been imbibed from the bidding or the play or the defense. And could you have thought differently? Because it might have led to a different result, which, as you know from the evidence, it was a better result. So I will put it very diplomatically, because I do want him to think of what he did wrong, why he did it incorrectly, and what is the solution going forward. The solution going forward is the most important thing. And human relationships, you can't succeed alone in bridge. You have to succeed with a partner.
So what would you have said in your younger days? Like, what the heck were you thinking?
I said, what, are you a moron? That's what I would have said.
Got it.
But that was 35, 40 years ago. Right. I was terrible. Now, I'm sorry, partner. Thank you, partner. Well played, partner. That is important.
You moron.
What is something people would be surprised to know about you?
That's a good question. I need to think about that. Because they know I play golf. They know I'm a fitness and health enthusiast. They know I'm a bridge player. They know I'm a family person. What would people be surprised to know about me? They would be surprised to know, not my family, because they know. Outside of my family, my friends and bridge players would be surprised to know that I can sometimes have a short fuse and say something very mean. Because in the bridge world, they haven't heard that for 40 years. So they would be surprised now that sometimes in family situations, I can be quite strong and quite nasty, which is something I have to work on. So they would be surprised. Because what they see outside is different. And at home, I know my family sees it and obviously they don't like it, but I'm working on it.
How are you working on it?
I'm working on it because my son actually is, who lives in the States, and he has told me, he sent me books and he sent me, YouTube videos. And he says, how, before you say something, pause. So you're about to say something bad, take a deep breath and pause and consider. And there's this thing known as the 5 tests. Are you, before you say something, is it going to hurt someone? Is it truthful, etc., etc.? So he's made me read those things. And he's a smart young kid. And I have been working on that. So while I do it, I still do it, but I do it far less than I did. And I'm trying very hard to eliminate that from my life.
Do you have a favorite bridge tournament that you always make an effort to get to?
Yes, it obviously has to be the Spingold, because it was my first national win when I went in 1987 as a rookie, as a newcomer, and I had no team. And Zia helped me form a pickup team, and we won that nationals. It was an American nationals. It was one of the most prestigious events, and it still is one of the most prestigious events in the world. And obviously, that has to be my favorite because this was in 1987, which was a long time ago. So I went, I saw, as they say, and I conquered. And it was has to be the best. Of course, I still love all world championship events. And every event that I go to, I go to with the same passion, the same vigor, the same zeal, hoping and wanting and that I can and will win. But, you know, life is not always like that.
What is the biggest schlemozzle or muck-up you've ever had at the table?
Okay. This happened to me recently, and opponents had just discussed before the start of the session, our opponents are playing one diamond. Do we play two diamond as an overcall as natural, or do we play it as a Michael's qubit? And an opponent, they discussed it, and one opponent said, we will play it as natural. And his partner, who's an expert partner, forgot what they discussed 20 minutes ago and bid two diamond as Michael's and played in their 2-1 fit when they were actually called for 6 hearts. And it was even odd that opponents, not realizing what had happened, misdefended the hand to allow it to go 5 down, vulnerable, not that it mattered, versus 7 down, vulnerable, but they were, and went down 500 where they were making 1430. I mean, even this happens to expert partnerships who have discussed their methodology 3 minutes before that 10-board round is started. So it was quite amusing.
But Jaggy, what about the biggest schlemozzle that you yourself have made?
Yes, there was. It was something, it's kind of a big error, but I got saved by a miracle. It was the finals of the 1987 Spingold. And the bridge play starts at 1 p.m. every day, except the finals. It starts at 12 noon. And I was young and paying my own expenses. I had no sponsor, and I had paid for my own room. Midway through the tournament, I found someone, an American friend, who was my age and said, you know, I'm also here. My professional work is over. Why don't we share a room? We'll save costs. So I said, okay, good, great. So I fortunately moved into the room with him, and the night before the finals, obviously we were so excited, and I was young, and we were drinking till 5 in the morning. Thinking, oh well, you know, we have to play at 1 o'clock, plenty of time. And I set my alarm for 12:30, that I'm going to play the Spingold finals at 1 o'clock. I don't need more time than that to get ready and jump across, walk 5 minutes and get to play. And we were a 4-member team. And at 11:40, my friend who had also been drinking with me somehow wakes up to go to the restroom and wakes me up. He says, wake up, you schmuck. I said, for what? Looked at my watch. It's 11:40. Let me sleep. I have 40 minutes, 50 minutes more of sleep. He says, you schmuck, don't you know that you have to play at 12 on the last day? It's the finals of the Spingold. The schedule is such that it's 1 hour early. I said, oh my God. I jumped out, jumped into the shower, put on some clothes and ran and made it in time. And we were a 4-member team, remember. If I had come an hour late, we would have been disqualified. And I would probably never have forgiven myself. And that was the biggest, almost ridiculous, schmucky, mucky thing I ever did in my whole life.
What is the funniest thing that's ever happened to you when you were playing bridge?
Yeah, that's the funniest thing is really about a story which Zia wrote about in his first book, Bridge My Way. We were playing a tournament. I don't know if you read that story, but we were playing in France in Cannes. And we're playing a pair event, and the bridge in Europe is very light. As you know, you start at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you play till 7, and you have a nice morning, you laze around, nice evening, and it's perfect. So it was the finals of the pairs, and I was young, and you know, I hadn't traveled that much to Europe at that time, and I wanted to do a little sightseeing. Of course, the story that's in the book is a little exaggerated, and this is the real version. So I went to an island which is just across and took the ferry across to see a little bit, and a ferry which looked to be going every 30 minutes to an hour. So I went across. There were a lot of French people, lovely island. You could see Cannes right across. It was a 15-20 minute ferry ride. Sat around with a beautiful view, had a nice cup of coffee. And I said, okay, now it's 2 o'clock. And for safety, I think I should take one of the earlier ferries and get back. And I get to the ferry terminal, and I hadn't known or realized they were closed for between 2 and 3 for lunchtime. So there was no shuttle or no ferry till 3 o'clock, and the game was starting at 3. So I go to find a payphone, and there was no Google. I asked someone, I said, can you speak a little English? And they said, yes, maybe. You know, the French, when they can be very rude if you don't speak French, but they have their nose up in the air. And I'm begging them, I said, it's very important, it's a matter of life and death. Can you help me find the number of this hotel? And someone, after many attempts, found the number. And from a payphone, I managed to call Zia's room. And lo and behold, of course, Zia's sleeping. And Zia picks up the phone, says, what the hell are you doing, schmuck, calling me at 2:15 in the afternoon? You know, we have to play at 3 o'clock, I wake up at 2:30. I said, Zia, hold on, hang on, listen. This is what has happened. Can you know, you're so influential. Can you help me find a private boat? You know, you can make a couple of calls and they'll come and pick me up. And it's a 10-15 minute ferry ride, which will be a 5 minute speed boat ride. He said, let me see what I can do. Try to call me back in 15 minutes. So I called him back in 20 minutes. In the meantime, I secured my ticket on the 3 o'clock ferry and called him back in 20 minutes. He says, schmuck, I could not find anyone. It's too late. But I did do one thing. I've spoken to the director and allowed me to play with a substitute for the first round. And you better get there and run. Fortunately, the stop of the ferry was at the convention center, which was where the tournament was being held. So I landed at 3:15. He says, I will try and stall the start of the first round. And the second round. And I ran and I made it in time for the second session. The story has a happy ending because we won the event. And then, of course, Zia had to tease me and say, you know, I don't think you should have come back. I found a better partner. So I said, yeah, thank you, Zia. But that's so typical of Zia, right? So that was the funniest thing that ever happened to me at a bridge tournament. So it's been written about and a lot of people know about it. But the actual event, I mean, Zia exaggerated, right, that I fell in love with a French girl on the island and I didn't want to come back and so on and so forth. But that wasn't the truth. I mean, did I not want to win an international bridge event with Zia? I mean, I absolutely did. That I might have fallen in love with a French girl is a separate story. But that's not part of this story.
That is great. That is great. What is the most memorable or most unexpected place where you've played bridge?
Well, I would like to say it was a hot air balloon or maybe on a space shuttle, but the reality is it's quite unusual and it's great. I played in a private castle in Holland and Zia got me invited to play with him. But there was a minor royalty owned a castle who holds a private tournament in Holland. This was also some 35 years ago. And Zia said, come, this guy's invited us. You know, he'll pay for the local hospitality, but you'll stay and play in a castle. And I said, wow. So I said, okay, let's go. And that, for me to play in a private castle, and they do have many of these castles around. And of course, this particular person doesn't host tournaments in that castle anymore. And I don't think it's done after. But I did play in a castle. And it was an unusual and a fantastic experience.
How many of you were involved?
I think there were only 8 pairs, 16 people. So it was quite exclusive. And it was more of a fun thing. He loved bridge, and it was more about the champagne in the evening and a nice evening. And he had some live musicians and so on and so forth. But it was unbelievable. I mean, as a 30-year-old, who would have a chance to experience that, especially coming from India?
How many days were you at the castle?
That was only 3 days. And out of which we played bridge only a day and a half. Because it was more of, as I said, more of a fun thing. You know, look around, see the beautiful, the swans and the peacocks roaming around the gardens, have some fabulous service, have some great cocktails in the evening, some great wine, some great champagne. That was the whole basis of the tournament. It was fun. And I don't even remember who won. That means it was so much fun.
Is there a hot button issue in bridge that's particularly important to you?
Yes, there is. Ethics, cheating, and anything associated with that is a real issue with me. I, for example, would bend over backwards and not cheat rather than win a world championship. What could be more important than that? I would never play in a team which has a personable, questionable ethics. Playing with a partner is out of question if I have even the remotest doubt that he is. And I am so glad that people like Boye, Brogelande and others exposed some of what we now know as the well-known cheats of the game. And justice has been served and they've been banned, which is fantastic because I personally played against two of the pairs in question. It's not right for me to take names. And when one of theirs, I was surprised that they were very, very good. But how did they get every hand right when they played an odd system? They played a system of one no trump can be any hand, balanced or unbalanced in a particular range. And in competitive auctions, how they always got the solution right. I just couldn't fathom it. And they had the most incredible results. The other pair I played against was one guy I played against in a Vanderbilt round of 16 or quarterfinal. That's the last time I played in America, 7-8 years ago. And one of them played double dummy, card perfect, bit perfect, was outstanding. And his partner made several elementary errors. And that pair had fantastic performances over the preceding, because in the middle 3-4 years I didn't go. And they had an incredible performance. And I just couldn't for the life of me fathom how they had done so well. So I asked other people and they said there are some questions about the ethics. And then it was exposed. So that for me is a very hot button, a very important issue, and it's a very important principle in life.
How likely are you to call the director if there's been an irregularity and you don't know if there is an ethical issue, but you suspect that there could be?
Well, I do call the director when I think there is something that could, you know, there's an irregularity or a hesitation or a pause which could have influenced an opponent's decision, no matter how good or bad the opponent is. Or now, whether I feel a person is unethical or not is not the question at all. It's if I feel that, you know, people will be influenced by pauses and irregularities. And if it does affect the result, in the fairness of equity and fairness and justness, I will call a director. But it's not that often, having said that.
It's interesting because as a newer player, you're encouraged to call the director at the first sign of an irregularity.
Right.
But then you realize that more experienced players don't have a lot of patience for certain types of director's calls. And so you're sort of stuck. It's like, on the one hand, I'm entitled to always call. On the other hand, I don't want to be a nuisance. I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to antagonize people unnecessarily. And so then you find yourself wondering, is this the right time to do it? And it's sort of an interesting, especially if somebody is highly attuned to ethical breaches, are they going to check their instinct to call the director or are they going to go for it?
Yeah, see, if I have the slightest doubt about a person's ethics, I will always call the director. If I'm absolutely sure the person is absolutely ethical, I will call the director only if I feel there could be an influence on the other side. I will go so far as to say that if I've taken an unusually long time on my side of the screen, I will encourage my opponent to call the director because I believe in the equity and fairness and justice of the game. So I will tell my opponent, please call the director because I've taken an unusually long time, which can obviously be only me because you people were not involved in the bidding. So I will bend over backwards the other way as well. So that's how much I believe in the equity and fairness and justice of the game. And that's my philosophy of life.
Jaggy, do you have a favorite bridge convention?
Yes, I do. For me, my biggest favorite is the simplest convention in the world. It's called Blackwood, which has evolved into Keycard Blackwood. Keycard Blackwood wasn't around in the days that I played. The days that I started. And it came about and one learnt it and improved. But it's a simple, very simple proposition. Never bid a slam missing two cashable aces. Exclusion, keycard, Blackwood and all came later. But very, very simple. Blackwood. It has to be Blackwood.
Is there a bridge convention that you really dislike?
Yes. People have been trying to get me to play... What is that Italian convention when you bid two clubs, which was either clubs or artificial strong hand? Gazzilli. Somehow, I tried Gazzilli. Somebody emailed me the simplest version of Gazzilli, and me and my partner tried to play it. And we practiced and bid 100 hands. We made only about 60 errors. And there was perhaps one hand where it could have gained. So I told my partner, no Gazzilli for me. I dislike Gazzilli. I'm sure the world's best players will say, he's a moron, he's an oldster. Forget about him. What does he know about bridge? How can he hate Gazzilli? But I hate Gazzilli.
As an aside, Catherine and I love Gazzilli. But it's great to get an opposing point of view.
What is the best bridge tip or advice that you've ever been given?
Okay, the best tip that was always given to me was always be nice to your partner because bridge is a partnership game. If your partner does something terrible, awful, and you sound him out and be nasty or be very bad, what can happen? Only one thing can happen. It can diminish your performance as a pair. It only satisfies your ego and your own thoughts. It can do nothing good. It can do only everything bad. So be nice to your partner. Say sorry, partner. That is the best tip ever given.
Jaggy, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Thank you. Bye and good luck with your venture. All the very best.
And that's the show. Many thanks to our guest, Jaggy Shivdasani.
Thank you also to our Sorry Partner posse of listener supporters who make the show possible.
Sorry Partner is produced by Catherine Harris, with production assistance from Olivia Cooper. Our theme music was composed by Jocelyn Starts and produced by Daniel Graboy.
Send your bridge stories and comments to sorrypartnerpodcast@gmail.com or send us a voice message. And please consider supporting the show. Join the Sorry Partner posse, purchase books through our site, explore the merch store. These links and a link to Club Kvel are in your app, on the website at sorrypartner.com, or wherever you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you, but be nice, or we'll call the director. Until next time, play well.
May all your finesses be on side. And remember, as Jaggy says, be nice to your partner. Thank you, partner.
Thank you, partner.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.